It's definitely spring at last. Although it's still cold, the sea rustles, bluebells are bursting into a carpet of azure where the sunshine filters through the dark trees. Birds sing, and once again the process of the world filling with new life happens as it does every year. Everything new, everything the same, as it always has been. But that's only from our perspective. Perhaps there are other ways of looking at the passing years. Let's go in and have a ponder on such matters.
Hello, I'm Peter John Cooper. I don't know whether you have a cup of coffee or tea or a glass of something refreshing whilst you're listening to this, or on your way to work or drifting off to sleep. But today's story deals with all sorts of otherworldly ideas, so you might want to listen to this a couple of times. Maybe an opportunity to make a second cup or open another bottle. It's called I See You, Molly Ingister. I'm not a ghost, she said. Which was a bit of a blow because I had more or less made up my mind that she was. At least, after a couple of years of puzzling about her situation, I couldn't come up with any better explanation. And thinking about it later, I wasn't sure that even she was correct in her denial. After all, we know that one of the key things about ghosts is that they're often hanging about in haunted houses and so on because they haven't quite grasped that they are dead. The fact is, I think you'll find my existence more fantastic than you can comprehend. Oh, thank you, I thought. Your wisdom is beyond my puny earthling brain. No, what I actually said was, oh, to which she responded, I am an artist. Would I have seen any of your work? You couldn't understand it. Oh, thanks again. I am a photographer. No, you're right, I probably wouldn't. Do you carry a knife with you? But first, let's consider the facts and why we long-term residents of the Westcliff had arrived at our spectral analysis. Molly Ingister was definitely a haunter. That is, when she was there, she was always sort of hanging about without any apparent aim. It might be raining or snowing, a blizzard or hot sunshine, but there she was, always just there. Secondly, she had this habit of appearing, as it were, out of thin air and beginning a conversation just when you were considering what pizza to order from Papa John's or what you were going to watch on Netflix that evening. Or whatever. And then it would become the devil's own job to get away. Thirdly, she spoke in a slow, monotonous voice that could only have come from the ghostly realms, sort of faint and wispy, so that Quite a lot of what she said was carried away on the breeze, and it took a great deal of effort to gather what she was on about. Which, fourthly, was mostly in the form of opaque questions. What do you think the shape of happiness is? What is the colour of peace? And so on. There was a sort of tired melancholy about her which communicated to the listener so that you were almost instantly overcome with fatigue and ennui the moment she started to speak. Oh, and what's more, the clincher, she always wore sort of floaty, pale grey dresses that didn't seem to belong to this or any particular age. Could be 60s hippie muslin or Edwardian shapeless or even medieval peasanty to such uncouth men as me. As to her age, could I cop out and say she was ageless in the sort of way that any man would think of a woman between, say, 35 and 70? And bitter experience shows that it's best not to get involved with such arcane questions. And although she must have lived here a very long time, certainly from well before any of the current residents, nobody actually knew where she did live. More than one of the neighbours said they'd seen a sad white face pressed up against the window of one flat or another, but they could never agree on which one. Molly Ingester was, underneath, either very simply and straightforwardly deranged, or mightily complex, and we didn't really want to find out. We just wanted to get on with our lives without necessarily knowing what the smell of freedom in the morning was. For all these reasons and more, everybody tended to avoid her when they spied her loitering under the trees. In fact, folk would take long and extravagant detours around the green, or suddenly remember that they'd left the kettle on, or they needed to visit certain distant fourth cousins, necessitating long bus journeys in the opposite direction. But, as I said before, she could also appear and disappear at will, in exactly the same way that cats can move themselves about the place without having to go to the trouble of walking the distance in between. And I suppose that feline ability should have been a clue as to Miss Ingester's place in the universe. However, it was simpler to think of her as a ghost and act accordingly. Without the screaming and terror, of course, we do try to be a bit more polite round here. After all, this is the age of reason, isn't it? And so it was one spring morning, birds are twittering, trees coming into soft green leaf and so on, that I was pottering about taking a few snaps of the cuter types of wildlife for my webpage, hoping to get one of the squirrels to hold an acorn in its paws and look charming. When there she was, standing next to me and speaking in a vague, whispering manner. I am very aware of how people are uncomfortable in my presence.
Oh, no, no. Surely not. No, really? Who? Most people are very friendly round here.
I'm not quite invisible, am I? I try not to be.
I see you, Miss Ingester. I see you quite clearly.
No, you don't. You don't see me at all well.
Oh, right. Well, okay, then.
There are parts of me you don't see at all.
Oh, goodness, I
don't think we want... I've just remembered, I'm expecting a delivery. You know how these Amazon drivers are if you're not there. You won't see me at all after today. I wanted to explain. Have you got a knife? Oh, no. No, no, she wants, I don't know, or worse, with my Swiss Army knife, I gripped it tight in my jacket pocket. No, at least not on me. I wouldn't carry it. Give it to me. That squirrel you were photographing, suppose I used your knife to cut it in half. What? No, I'd rather you didn't. Not little Nutkin. I mean, I know they are a bit of a pest, but I'm not... Illustrative purposes only. Well, it wasn't the sort of illustration I would want in any picture book my children might chance upon. Let's just say I cut it in half. Yeah, well, okay. Across or lengthways? It doesn't matter. Well, it probably does to the squirrel. Is it dead? Well, I suppose it is now. Poor Nutkin. The point is, if you examined a thin slice of that squirrel, could you deduce the shape of the whole animal, if you'd never seen one before? But I'm a bit too imaginative, and I really didn't want to fill my head with consequent blood and innards. Could you see how it was in life? Just one slice at a time? I think I was beginning to see why I'd never seen any of her artwork in any of the local galleries. My mind was beginning to fill up with images of bloody dripping slices of wildlife arranged neatly in a toast rack. Let me try something different. No, not hedgehogs or badgers, please. Think of a two-dimensional squirrel. Doesn't that make you sad? Well, I'd run over a few in my time. I swerved when I could, but sometimes, well, they were definitely two-dimensional after that. And then I suppose I was sad, but only for a few moments when I thought of its babies waiting for Mummy or Daddy to get home with lunch. All right. Say you were photographing a squirrel then. You are looking at an animal in three dimensions and representing it as a flat photograph, three dimensions into two. It's a trick of perspective. Yes, but doesn't that make you sad? If rendering three dimensions as two only distances you from the squirrel, think of the difficulty of rendering three dimensions in a four-dimensional world. You can't ever... Look, I shouldn't really be talking to you, but I've grown to like this place, and you won't see me after today. Oh, well, I hope you've got somewhere nice to go. We'll be sorry to see you moving out. It's been such a brief time. I've only been able to make a couple of very poor artworks. What, 20 years? You've been here longer than I have. For all I know, you've been... Time is relative. I've done my best to capture something of the reality. But I think people looking at what I've made will just look at you and think, how cute. Cute? Me? Well, I suppose all of you, all of this, I didn't mean to patronise. Perhaps if I'd had more time, I'm sorry. I really am. And she did the cat thing and was gone. Well, I've often thought about Molly Ingester. I hope to God she didn't do anything stupid, but I got the feeling there was something else that, for all her melancholy, wasn't going to lead to that. The sense of her sadness was that of an artist when they'd finished an artwork and realised it couldn't be revisited anymore, that it was entirely flat. And for ages after, I thought about the idea of me photographing these cute creatures in two dimensions, distant from them, gazing through a lens, a window I could never open. And sad for them because they couldn't see the whole picture as I saw it. What if, say, you and I existed in a fourth dimension? Wouldn't we be sad for all the cute little three-dimensional beings that had no idea they were seeing and experiencing so little of what was really going on? They would see slices of us in our higher dimension, passing by, passing through, but never able to comprehend the totality of our existence. Artists and ghosts, they're all sad, and all for the same reason, locked out of the party of the world that they can never rejoin. Sometimes just catching a glimpse through the window, but never seeing what would remain hidden to them forever. Always somewhere and something else. I saw the abbreviation ICYMI printed in a newspaper column. My brain immediately translated it as I see you, Molly Ingester, and I knew at once I had to write a story about her. Her situation immediately popped into my brain. It was only later I discovered that ICYMI means in case you missed it. As to the name Molly Ingester, I discovered later from Google that she was a character in an American short story written in the 1920s. I swear I knew nothing about that and had never read it or come across the writer. My brain came up with the name all on its own. Spooky or what?